right, guys. Hello and welcome to a very special episode today. I'm really, really excited today because this is going to be special in so many ways. Let me start with the fact that we're actually doing this live. So we are at this very moment, we're live on different platforms such as TikTok and YouTube. And let me explain you why we do this. So for the ones that follow me in the last couple of years, you might know that I started with a podcast. I did it for around 2 years and I started doing it in Swiss German. So we had some really nice interviews, nice podcast episodes. And, you know, after talking to many more people, mainly English native speaking people, they told me that they would love to listen to my podcast, but they simply can't because they don't understand a single word, right? So around 1 year ago, I changed my strategy. I started doing these podcast episodes in English, and it was a lot of fun. I also changed my strategy a little bit in a way that I'm like more talking about marketing related topics, not just doing interviews. And yeah, it was fun for a while. And now I'm ready to do the next step, which is actually doing these sessions live. And I can already see that some people joined here on TikTok. Very welcome. We're also live on YouTube. So this is happening right now. Some of you might listen to this episode on Spotify, which means obviously you guys are not listening to it live. We're going to do a post-production and put it on Spotify. So everybody that listens to my podcast on Spotify, very welcome. Just know that in future, you can also join these sessions, or you might, we'll see how it goes today, but you might join this session live. The reason why I'm doing this is because I would love to interact with you, so you can really join the conversation, basically. So, well, that's it for the first introduction. That's not the only reason why I'm super excited today, because the other reason, it's even more important, I have the most amazing guest for this live session today. His name is Jacob. He's an old friend of mine. And let me just tell you this. We tried to do this podcast like session for so many, probably not years, but at least months. So we tried and we just couldn't get it done. He was busy. I was busy. We were completely on a different schedule until today. And I'm really, really happy that he's here. And without further ado, I would say, we're going to bring in Jacob.
Oh, finally, Matt, you did it.
Hi, we did it. I'm so, so happy. Like how
only
many
took
times?
A few months.
I remember the first time we talked about it was like over a year ago at least, right?
Oh man, it's been a while. I don't remember the exact date, but my God, you were in a city, I was in a city, I'm traveling, and then the time that we randomly overlapped in Ho Chi Minh and didn't even know each other were in the city, like it's just been all over the place.
Yeah, that's a really interesting story. We have to share that with the people. It was crazy because you might remember, and I did a podcast episode about that as well, actually, about working from far away. So I spent the last couple of months abroad, mainly in Southeast Asia. And because Jacob is currently still based in Southeast Asia, we're going to cover that in a minute. So we thought, like, how fun would it be to meet again after some years in person and do this session in person, which we couldn't manage because of like being busy and everything. But then a couple of weeks later, we realized that we just missed for, what was it, like 2 days, right?
Yeah, it was ridiculous, man. I think you were right on your way out and we had just got in and was just trying to sync up with you. And then you were like, shit, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm like, no.
Exactly, exactly. You mentioned like, hey, I'm in Saigon now. I was like, wait a minute. I was in Saigon like 2 days ago. It was so random. So fun. But yeah, we missed
small world.
Each other, but now we can meet virtually. How amazing is that, right?
Indeed, indeed. The one thing COVID gave us.
Yeah, exactly. A huge push in that direction. Agree. we're at the very beginning. Still see that some people are joining the live. So let's do a proper introduction. So can you just please introduce yourself to people who are listening, whether that's on Spotify or TikTok or wherever?
Like, yeah, happy to.
Who are you?
Who am I? Wow, such a deep question. So let's start with name. I can do that, Jacob. And been originally out of the US, but been living abroad for maybe 12 years now. And that's brought me all over the world, working at different research institutes, places like EPFL in Switzerland, the VIS Institute in Geneva, what else? The Mira Institute in the Netherlands, ID Lab in Belgium. Then spent some time up in Canada, a place called Tandem Launch, which is a deep tech accelerator, working on some technologies to spin out of Mila and some supporting research for doing different machine learning applications, and then bounced over to Singapore and ended up in Southeast Asia, spinning out more tech. And yeah, that's where we are today.
All right. So yeah, I think we have to cover some of these places, especially I remember Belgium because it was like really interesting because you worked on like for the time that it like on pretty advanced technique, which is AR and VR, virtual reality. So we're gonna cover I definitely want to talk about that in a moment. All right, so you're originally from the US, from which part?
Family's all in Southern Florida. I always tell people near Miami, everybody knows where Miami is, but maybe 30, 45 minutes north of Miami. Okay. Was born in the middle of the U.S., grew up on the West Coast, California area, Southern California area, and then family all moved back to East Coast, all Southern Florida. And that's kind of where everybody is now. If I were to say that's where I'm from, I suppose that's accurate enough.
Yeah. And man, I miss the U.S. Did some trips to the U.S. Fell in love with the country. Did the family got like affected by the what was the name of the latest hurricane?
Oh, I'm spacing.
I don't remember the name, but I just saw some footage that it was huge.
Yeah, luckily nothing bad happened, and I think it's just scary to see these things getting worse and worse. You know, who knows where this all leads, but luckily didn't have to worry about family being affected by it, so we were safe.
All right, especially for people here living in Central Europe, like the US is this magical place where dreams come true or can come true. Like, why did you decide to in the first place to leave? Because it's a big step, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the US is great. It's always going to be home, but it's not everything. And I think the thing that's sold about the US is half true. You can do a lot. There's a lot of push to, try crazy things and just go for it and see what happens, but it's not everything. And if you really want to get an idea of what's happening in the world, I think you know, it's every individual's responsibility to take that effort upon themselves and, go out there. So I think it was just finishing up my master's research and just was working for a small engineering firm. And in that moment, just slowly was iterating like, all right, this is my life. I'm going to, be working for, this design firm, making these really cool things. We were actually at that time doing, mock design ups from things that actually led to iPad, which was really, really cool. So this individual's company was doing really low level design work and interfacing with these bigger companies. So the work was really cool, but I just saw the rest of my life kind of planned out and it wasn't very exciting. And so it was right around that time, I guess this is my late 20s, well, getting old. And just realized like if I stay here and keep working, I'll be here for the rest of my life doing things that are interesting, but it's not my vision. It's not my dream. And, there's a big, scary world out there. And it's cliche, but life really does begin at the edge of your comfort zone. And so for me, it was, sell all my stuff, pack up everything, find a place that I really want to contribute to, take on a project that I think is more than I can handle and jump on it. And that started 12 years of traveling around the world.
Wow. What was your first like stop. Did you come directly to Switzerland? No.
So 5 years were spent in the Netherlands, and this was working for a place called the Mir Institute, doing some really cool stuff around breast cancer imaging, diagnostics using light. Basically, how do we see inside of your body without having to dig around in there and, you know, do some sort of invasive surgery? So working on a lot of imaging techniques around there, really fundamental physics, really cool stuff. I mean, just future tech, right? And the nice thing about that was we were spinning it out to hospitals and what was kind of a startup company tied to a research institute. And just kind of unfolded from there, got deeper into that. The technique progressed. I was working on aspects of that and then kind of fell in love with kind of a subdivision of that field, which was being able to control light in space and time. So doing some really clever things with physics to do more types of imaging.
You had your PhD at that point already, right?
No, this was like a joint project. So this was part of the PhD completion, which was we're working on, you know, fundamental physics, but moving these ideas into breast cancer imaging techniques. Of course, publishing papers around that, understanding hemodynamics around cancer and tumors and how that progresses and how we can monitor that. And then kind of at the late stage, which is how I ended up going to Switzerland, started getting into, you know, how do we do fundamental physics around controlling light with digital hardware?
Really interesting. I mean, I just told my partner the other day that days before we did this interview, I just said I'm so excited because you might just be the smartest person I met so far. It's
I don't know about that. I can barely tie my shoes, Max. Come on.
Yeah, but that's like what the smart guys are all about, right? They're struggling with the stuff that it's easy for us, right? They have like because their mind just works different.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I always like to think that I was surrounded by geniuses and true geniuses, and mostly me trying to keep up. Like just some of the people I worked with were, I think, exactly who you're talking about. Just absolute brilliant human beings where, you know, I feel like I'm a ape up in the tree flinging, you know, fruit around and watching them do, you know, like alien type stuff. So I can only speak towards the people I worked with and how great they were.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, the surrounding is very important as well, right? So it changes you as well. If you surround yourself with smart people, I believe that it automatically makes you smarter, or you just have different thoughts and everything.
For sure.
Yeah.
Osmosis, right?
Yeah, exactly. So around the time, I want to jump a bit forward because we actually, you and me, we met, in what was it like for the first time? It was 2015, probably
late 15, maybe 16, somewhere maybe around there. It's a blur.
Yeah. Maybe 16. So we actually, for the guys listening here, we actually met by just, you know, working together, which was, for me, it was really interesting. The thing is, we only worked, I don't know, for 2 months, 3 months together, I think.
It was fairly short. Yeah. I mean, it was just a flash when I look back.
Just a flash, but I just realized that when, you know, talking to you for the first time, I was like, all right, so this guy's smart. Probably we didn't meet in the right setup because
say that again.
Yeah, that's like mildly sad because you most people that follow me, they know that I've been working for this startup, and this is also where I met Jacob. And this was like after he left, I was only staying there for probably couple more months, maybe a year before also leaving and before actually founding my own company. So I'm not gonna discuss the startup itself here, but I'm grateful for so many things that happened during that time, like meeting you, because it's ridiculous, right? We actually worked on the same thing. you and me, only a very short time, but we've been in touch ever since. So yeah, for that, man. I'm really grateful, because I wouldn't have met you, and I would even say, like, yeah, I mean, we even after, I think you moved to Belgium to this other lab that we're gonna talk about in a minute, but like we kept in touch.
Yeah, not only kept in touch, I mean, just kind of ideated around the space that I think you and I saw emerging, and we're like, wow, this is going to be powerful. This is going to be really cool. And to be honest, if I was to go back to the conversations we were having then and kind of what's unfolded now, I mean, we were predicting parts of the future, right? We were really like honed in on, all right, we see the evolution happening, and lo and behold, you know, of course, Facebook makes its big jump, and this kind of virtual world is unfolding in our eyes. And we were thinking about, like, what does that mean for VR? What does that mean for AR? And how does that fit into life, business, and just cool tech? I remember that all those conversations were amazing.
It's true, but at the same time, like we can open this discussion a little bit, because one thing we were talking about that was probably in 2017 was this whole augmented reality, virtual reality scene, and we discussed so many different, let's call it, opportunities, or like we now know that this technique or this thing is existing, but it's at the same time not really happening. And I'm talking mainly about the AR part, right? Because virtual reality, we saw some baby steps at the beginning, but now this is like this is happening, especially with the metaverse. Like VR is happening. It's now, let's say, 5 years later, but the whole augmented reality thing is still not part of our life, which I think is crazy. And that's also where we struggle, because like 5 years ago, we had some great ideas about what to do with augmented reality, but we accepted at the same time that, you know, we're just too early, right? Nobody is ready, and we just have to give it time until augmented reality becomes part of our life. And I just think about that quite often, that nothing really changed. And it's been 5 years, right? So I understand that billions
spent.
Exactly, right? And I understand that, you know, metaverse, that's the next big thing. Like everybody's talking about it. Some crazy happens around it, like, you know, companies or individuals buying landmarks at the metaverse. Like this is happening. It might just be another bubble. We don't know yet. But like in a way that, you know, a technique that changed our daily life, like that didn't happen. And for me, the main, I remember that so good, that we said, like, especially with AR, it's just like, it's useless to build AR experience based on your smartphone, right? We said, like, we have to wait until like this next gadget, which would most certainly be goggles. They have to be on the market in order for AR to become, well, reality actually. And that really, you know, I just don't know why we're not at that point right now. Like, we're still walking around with smartphones, by now with smartwatches. We had that back then too, but like this huge step from the early 2000s, when the first smartphones got introduced, like that was a big step for society, right? But nothing really major happened after that, I feel.
Yeah, it is a bit disappointing. I mean, it really is. Like, you can get so excited about the technology. You can see that this is really the third rebirth of VR, the push that Meta's doing. And, you know, it's going to take a company of that size to actually make anything that's viable for you and I to enjoy and have it just be pervasive in our life. But I think the biggest problem, the thing that's really missing is the delivery, right? We're bound by compute and battery life. And the second that you need something always on, sitting on your face, and, you know, doesn't feel horrible, isn't heavy, isn't, you know, annoying, you don't have to plug it in every 30 minutes. I mean, we're going to have to rethink in my opinion, the compute fabric that we use. So just the way that computation actually happens, and we can embed these into, you know, wearable devices. And I see VR as actually the testing ground before we get to AR. And the reason is, you know, people are still comfortable, you know, plugging in whatever headset you might use into a computer, or wearing something kind of funky that you're not going to be out in the world with. And you can, you know, cram the optics, you can cram what is the compute and memory and all the things to support it. But until we actually, you know, really, really do VR well and get that form factor figured out, I don't think we're going to be able to unplug and walk outside with whatever's sitting on our face. And until that happens, like, you're right. I think AR through a phone is fun for 5 minutes. Any more than that, I don't care. I don't want to touch it. I don't want to see it. You know, and I think you and I spend a lot of time iterating on like what that would mean. What, why would you ever want to hold up your phone and see what that is, you know, what this augmented world would be.
Exactly. And it's also like crucial for the whole ad industry, which is what I'm doing with my company. Like, we discussed so many different approaches on how to actually use, whether it's, well, VR, I kind of can't imagine how advertising will work in future in a place like the metaverse, but in the real, in the actual world, like, I just didn't see it happening back then, and I still don't right now. But the ideas are there, but we, like, it always was this connection from the actual experience that you would have with the gadget that you need to put this experience in front of you. And yeah, I'm just really, like, this goes out to mainly to Apple, I think. I'm just really disappointed that nobody is walking around with, like, I don't
Shots
know.
I'm fired, I'm, Apple.
Exactly. So if you guys listen, yeah, you just do it. Just get it out there, because we all know that you've been working on it. For whatever reason, you're not, you know, pushing it or release it. So just get it done. People are, you know, we're ready for this, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I would much rather see Apple deliver this than Meta, for sure. And yeah, as you say, they're working on it. Everybody knows. When you look at who they're hiring for, technology that they're building around this stuff, some of the patents that they file. I mean, we were looking at patents back in 2017 around some of this stuff that was coming out of Apple. And, you know, we're looking at the notch in the camera and what that means. And they're already kind of, you know, embedding what would be a small form factor into something that's ubiquitous in society, which is our phone. And, you know, where they take that from there, who knows? But if anybody's going to make something that I actually want to put on my face, I feel like I want that to be Apple. And then you add in the privacy stuff, you know, they're pretty much pro consumer privacy, at least a lot better than the other giants out there. So yeah, if something comes out, I want it from Apple.
Totally agree. I was just like, did you ever use the metaverse? Yeah.
Man, I have not. And this is coming from someone who loves VR. And I haven't touched VR in a year and a half. Like, I just have not had the opportunity. And I'm super curious. I hear mixed things.
I hear mixed things, but I also see mixed things, not necessarily in the VR, but like the recordings of the VR. And it's like, it feels like, I don't know, man, this technology was built like 100 years ago, right? And Zuckerberg made this huge announcement that they now add like legs to the characters. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I mean, come on, it's 2022. Like, don't tell me it's a big thing to add legs to a character. Like, and I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if it takes too much resources to actually build a good environment or good experience. But it feels like every single scene that I see from Meta, it looks like it, I don't know, like it could be like a Game Boy game from the 90s, right? Really bad quality. And I think this is where they also struggle, like, because or why people are not, I'm still very not skeptical. I understand that it, you know, it brings a lot of value, especially with the push that COVID had on companies and the way, you know, teams can interact. I get that, but you don't want to do that with like bad graphic and bad experience, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's same old story. It actually touches on the point that we were discussing earlier, which is, you know, compute and what we can do and the reality of what that is. And you know, when you hear them talk about why they're doing cartoonish characters and you know, just coming out with legs, it's because we can get almost there, but not there. And, you know, everybody's heard of this uncanny valley. And to put on VR and see synthetic humans that just don't make it there is disturbing. You know, we have, you know, an actual chunk in our brain dedicated to just recognizing and processing faces, you know, humans, that interaction. And so when something's off, completely out of our control, there's just a cascade of events that fire subconsciously, then we're conscious of it. And, you know, it's unsettling. And so what I think will happen, and maybe it's bad to make predictions on live recorded media, but what I think is going to happen is there's just going to be one very surprising moment, because they're not going to release anything that's half there. They're not going to release anything that's three-fourths there. And so while they're working out all the bugs and figuring out how to make that final leap, we're going to stay in these kind of cartoonish worlds where we can do the rendering, we can do it fast enough, we can do it reasonably well, that kind of helps you suspend disbelief and, you know, pretends to connect you to whoever you're talking to. But the day that we get it, there's no in between that we can be doing. And so that's going to be the interesting thing, is when it's solved, it's just going to be a swapping out, right? Unless you really love the cartoons. But yeah, as long as that uncanny valley exists and humans, you know, maintain this ability to, you know, intricately decompose an image and find out if it's real or not in their brain, it's just the way it's going to be. So yeah, I don't know when that's going to happen, but I see it just being an explosive moment in VR.
True. And I also like it's a good point, especially about the timing when to release things, not even, you know, for gadget products like Apple, but also for Meta, because I think they are still struggling with the ad product from this whole experience. And this is a major point, right? I mean, nobody can tell me that they're just doing it so people will, you know, enjoy the experience and meet with other people. Like Meta is a big company. They are all about the money. And so somehow they have to figure out how to monetize even a virtual reality platform or experience. And I think they would only push it, or well, it's released, but like roll it out in a big way, like you mentioned, whenever they know how to earn money with it, right? Whether that's with, you know, subscriptions or ad revenue, one way or the other, they wanna earn money. And I don't see how they earn money right now, which is also from my point of view, like holding them back to push it even further. Because I mean, you know, we all saw the stats, like Facebook is going down, Instagram is struggling with where we are live right now with TikTok, like things change. But in terms of ad revenue, like the Meta universe, not talking about VR, but the company, they still make tons of ad revenue. So why would they change something if they are making money, right?
Yeah, there's that point of view. Like, I guess the best thing for any large company to do is kind of cannibalize their own product, right? Because that means you're innovating, you're moving technology forward, you're not trying to entrench yourself in the way things were, but you're trying to actually create a world in the way things will be. And if there's anything that I can respect about, you know, what's happening at Meta, is the push, the money, the engineering side that they've put behind this effort is monumental. And again, if we're going to see this, it's going to take a company that size with that kind of cash flow to actually move this forward. But the advertising bit is also the scariest bit for me. You know, you and I just ethically debated this quite a bit in 2017, which is like, we don't want to live in a world bombarded by digital ads just flying at us from every direction. Every scene that you look at, every experience you have is somehow monetized by the provider. And I think it's a very, very tricky subject to get right, because there's so much to be made. There's so much to be had. Who gets there first and figures that out? But I feel like the second we get there, we're going to regret it as well. You know, I'm a big fan of the belief that we'll move to some sort of hybrid life in the near future. Not just like, oh, you put on your goggles, but you're spending the majority of your day and enjoying it, and maybe even preferring it in this virtual realm. And, you know, I don't want to live in that realm where we bring all of our screw ups from this world into that world so that we can, you know, somehow monetize this endeavor. So it's a very tricky thing to balance. I understand, obviously, that somehow this money needs to come from somewhere. Revenue needs to be made. You know, Meta's burning through billions, and that, you know, that eventually will end. So yeah, what that looks like, it's either going to be done poorly, or I think done bad, and I don't see a lot of good. Like, it's very hard to see an upside.
Yeah. It also forces the industry, like the ad industry, to rethink, you know, models. I saw, for example, but this is where I'm struggling. I saw a major insurance company like building this place at Meta where you can actually visit them. They added some booth and stuff, and I was like, who the hell would do that? Like, why would you go? Like, it's an insurance company. Come on, be serious. Like, and they probably spent quite some money on building this. It was what, like, I don't know. Some wannabe smart guy said, okay, we need to build this place in Meta because it's the hot thing. Our customers come to us and visit us there. Like, I mean, nobody obviously came, and it's just to try to find the purpose. We're not there yet, right? And I get the point that you mentioned before, like, don't bring the bad things from internet, what is it now, 2.0, to the whatever the next thing is. But still, I also believe in, you know, in the market and economy. And I feel like, you know, this is like advertising, especially. I get that. And that's what we try really hard with our company, to create really great ad experience for the people that actually see it, the content. So you can just read about it, that people don't like, as long as ads are relevant and in a way also entertaining, they don't feel like they distract people, right? So it just has to be, it has to be relevant. It has to be in a way entertaining. And then people don't mind getting ads. What you said, like, you just bombard whatever technology it is with ads that are not relevant. That's obviously a distraction. But I feel like that's just how the economy works, right? You have a seller who wants to sell service or products, and on the other side you have the buyer, and at some point they have to meet, and this is where, like, they always meet where the tension is. And it might just be that in future the tension is on the metaverse, so you still have to connect brands with individuals. It's a good thing as long as the experience with it is in favor for the actual user. I don't see it like you just walk down the metaverse, and there, you know, I know there are some cities you can even go to a bar, etc. So I don't see it like there will be like what we have now as out of home advertising. So you just walk down the street in a virtual city, and then you see random ads on the street.
Yeah, I think the distribution thing that you bring up is, I mean, it's going to be just maybe the most important aspect, because now, in this world, right, any sort of physical billboard can now be tailored and personalized. And, you know, maybe I get to decide what I see, who's going to be, you know, flashing their advertisement on some digital billboard or whatever that might be. And if it's things that I want or things that I'm interested in or whatever it might be, maybe it's your latest update. You just released a podcast and I see that, like, hanging on a banner on the, you know, side of some building. Cool. I care about that. I want that. And so the distribution side and the personalization side could be very interesting. But again, it's going to need a lot of pushback to get right. Because I think the second that we open up that ability to know who's where and now craft an experience of pure personalization, it can be great or it can be just horrific. And the other part of that is, you know, something I'd really love to see, and it's kind of more of a push in the community or just around owning your data and what that means and kind of this new data revolution, which is, you know, maybe I should somehow be included in the whole revenue stream if you're going to be advertising to me. Like, I don't know how that plays out, but if I get to play and participate in what I'm seeing and I get to have some input on, you know, the boundaries of what that looks like, I think that's cool, right? Because now I'm joining you in the creation of this world that I want to go be in, as opposed to saying, you know, we thought this is best for you, and now here it is everywhere you look. You know?
Yeah, it's totally true. It needs a new player, right? Different platforms tried this distribution and to let their content creator participate in the revenue, which totally makes sense. And I'm a huge supporter of this because these are the people that bring the attention to the platforms, but they only get like a very small percentage of the revenue. That's everywhere these days, right? It's just the new Spotify series out on Netflix. Like they basically, like they also try to change the music industry by just, you know, making the experience great and by having a great streaming platform. The reality is they don't, like the percentage that the actual artist receives is not that high, which is in a way, like it's a problem. And I think this is something that has to change in future as well, because I'm all about the attention and the content creators, the people that build their communities and bring other people to the platform, whether that's like an application right now or the metaverse in future. Like these people are, that's the whole soul of the system. Like they get the people to the platform, so they should also benefit if money was made, right?
I mean, attention is you need, and I think that that's just gonna have to be taken out of the hands, ideally out of a single company. And you know, I don't know what that looks like. If we're going to create a world that we're all going to participate in, it shouldn't be dictated by one Goliath, right? And it just leads to very scary situations in my mind. Like, are we going to create a dystopia, a virtual dystopia? And just what that looks like. But the attention point is right on. I mean, that's the thing that's what we're fighting for, right?
Yeah, it's true. Let's make a quick break here for the guys listening on Spotify. We're going to listen to some music. Just a nice break to give you time to think about what you just heard. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. We're back. How are you feeling?
Good, man. Everything's great. I love the conversation. It's interesting to revisit some of the stuff that we had chatted about and dug deep into for months, man. It's been a while.
It's true. Hey, I want to shift the conversation a little bit. As people on the live stream can see, there is this nice little logo on top of me. It's actually, you know, it's supposed to be somewhere closer to Jacob because it's not my thing. It's his thing. It's his baby. It's what he's working on right now. And I want to shift attention to Recast a little bit. So if you can just, again, as you did at the very beginning for yourself, now please do it for your, I'm just going to call it your baby.
So what do you want me to introduce what we're working on?
Yeah, please.
All right. So, Recast AI, really rethinking the world, just how we've painted the world. And the deeper that you go on that question, you really find that the world is just kind of full of bias and it's not really inclusive in any way, especially the marketing realm. So we've been building up databases of content for decades. And if you think about what those databases are, they're just kind of stereotypes of the world. So many years ago, working in an AI research lab, working on generative AI or around some other things, especially around someone who was in the lab at the time, he's doing some really cool stuff and just saw this kind of birth of what it means to generate content using, you know, AI and cloud compute. This was 2018, late 2017, really got into it. And saw a solution then early, but didn't really know where to position it. And the more I thought about that idea of like, you know, what is the world actually being represented as? Just kind of,
you know, I think every entrepreneur starts because they're unhappy about something in the world and they want to solve it. So just saw a way to recast the world in a different light and using generative AI to generate not only content for brands and people that are, you know, pushing this content out to the world, but do it in a way that allows them to be a little bit more inclusive, right? A little less unbiased, so we can represent the world as the way it actually is, not from, you know, decades of inaccuracies. So that was born. First iteration on this happened early 2020, and learned a lot working with enterprise doing generative AI around some of their campaigns. But, you know, giving it to a select few wasn't the best thing when I look back. And so just really rethought about the market dynamics, who the customer was that we wanted to serve with this technology. And Recast AI was born to kind of open up all of this generative AI stuff to, you know, smaller teams, SMEs, people like yourself, people that have in-house creative teams that are needing content, want content, not happy with stock imagery, right? They see the problem that we're addressing, which is, you know, this unrepresentative world that we're living in, and being able to use technology to solve that, but also solve a big, you know, pain point for anyone who needs to get their message out to the world, which kind of follows up to what we were talking about earlier. So Recast AI, go check it out, www.recastai.com. And we're launching actually next week, which is opening up these tools to anyone and everyone. So you can get on the platform, start generating. And, you know, we're really fleshing out a lot more technical issues around what it means to be creative, what it means to create on-brand content using these tools. And, you know, how do we facilitate teams working together? How do we get all this stuff out there in a thing that really solves not only the bigger vision, which is using content to inform and inspire, but, you know, solves more practical needs for smaller companies, which need to get more personalized conversations going with, you know, better discretized chunks of who their customers are. And so we're really just opening all these tools up. A lot of learnings over the years. I think a lot of people are just starting to catch on that this world exists. So I'm pulling this out of research for a couple of years, but now we're seeing companies like OpenAI and DALL-E. I'm sure everyone's seen some of that stuff on LinkedIn or on the internet. So very similar proposition, except we're just really tailoring this to, you know, users that we think will take advantage of this technology.
You're launching next week, right? That's what you said.
Launching next week, rolling this out to make sure it's safe, it solves problems. You know, we're really building something that's beautiful for one, fun to use, and helps you create content to really talk to your customer. And the things that we're generating, we're putting a lot of work into this to make sure that it's fundamentally solving something that I call creative alignment, which is, you might have a vision in your head, and then you might see what some of these models are putting out into the world. And that gap leads to a lot of frustration. So when you come to, you know, use whatever generative AI tool, it's very interesting in the beginning. It's very fun. Like, you're like, wow, you're shocked. I've seen this field be birthed. And so for me, it's a little bit normal. But when I see people come and actually use this for the first time, their jaw drops. And then there's a switch. There's a switch maybe 30 minutes in when you see them struggle to get what they have in their head out into the world. And so we spend a lot of time making sure that that's a much more enjoyable experience, a much more inspirational experience as well. And yeah, just get you what you want, and you can do it in seconds instead of, you know, what's mostly days of work now.
So can you make an example on how it actually works? How would you create content?
Yeah, so let's say you're a brand in, you're over in Europe, right? And you want to push out into Southeast Asia markets or Asian markets. And typically, if you're not, you know, a monster, right? You're not some Goliath MNC, every bit that you spend on content for marketing matters. And so you're really stuck trying to figure out, what do I spend that limited budget on to get enough content that allows me to speak and move into a new market, or maybe talk more personally to my customers I might already have. And so the biggest challenge is, you know, where do you go to get that content? And right now you go to stock imagery, right? If you're a smaller company and you don't have, you know, 100K to spend on content every year for custom content, you drop into stock imagery and immediately it's disappointing, right? It's disappointing for the quality. Everybody sees the stockiness of it. And it's just not engaging, right? You're not engaging with your audience in a way that's unique. You're not able to separate yourself from your competitors. You know, if you go to a stock library and you download that image, what's to say your competitor in the same space isn't using that image? And actually, if you Google and search and see what some of your competitors use, or just in a field, you'll see how many people are using the exact same image. Right, there's one shining example that my co-founder Yuzu showed me, which was a very famous, I don't know if famous is the right word, but a highly used image of a woman that was undergoing cancer therapy. And anyone and everyone who's doing diagnostics is using that stock image, you know, and it's crazy to see just how prevalent it was on the web through just about every company that we Googled. We could find it on their webpage. And now how do you take that limited budget, that true pain of not having enough time to execute things, and allow someone to, you know, create whatever in their mind? And that's where this technology really shines. It allows someone to go from zero to one in seconds. And not only that, but really truly connect with the people you want to connect with. So how does it work? So you have to take a description, right? You're writing something in text. I want an image that is so-and-so. I don't have a good working example with me, but the thing that we add on top of this, so let's just take our cancer patient stock photography image that I was talking about. Well, if you really want to talk to people in different locations, you don't want to be showing what is essentially the backbone of all stock imagery databases, a bunch of white people typically, you know, fall into a certain category. And now you're trying to talk to your customer using something that just doesn't represent them, right? It doesn't speak to them. It's hard to identify. And so let's say you want it to be on brand. So you can come to our platform, describe the ethnicity of that person, what they're doing. You can use your brand colors. You can integrate with teams. Let's say you have a few people on your team and you can iterate on this vision and generate the content until you're happy with what you want. And now you have it pretty much on demand and it takes seconds to get there. So that's one like very specific example. But now let's say you want to be very creative. And, you know, you got a couple people on your team doing in-house creative work. That only goes so far, right? And if you want to constantly be updating your audience and speaking to your audience and doing things that are super creative, there's only so many, you know, images that you can find that will speak in that way. So, you know, just whatever's in your mind, you can now describe in a brief, put your brand colors on, you know, dictate the aspect ratios and what this will look like and just go generate it. And now, you know, fill out your campaign, move forward and have those conversations that you want with those specific people.
So that would solve the issue of this cancer patient where, you know, everybody and their grandmother is using the same image, yeah. Right? Because it's right. Like super individual. In the actual world that we're living in, like I could generate this content and use it and distribute it on different platforms, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It, just on that note, really quick, there's another thing to think about, which is the licensing around that content. And so one of the biggest things that we also give is you outright own anything that you create. You are the full owner. There's no weird, complex licensing structures. There's no this or that. Generate it, own it. It's as simple as that.
The competitor could still use it as well, right? Right now. There's no like technical solution to prevent that somebody else is using it that wasn't actually creating this content.
So whatever you create is yours. It's in your account. It's, you know, hidden from the world. So anything that you're generating on our platform is shared between you or your team. And, you know, if you purchase something and you want to share it, great. But the we take actually great efforts to ensure that even if somebody knows what you were trying to create, if they come back to the platform and try to recreate it, it's virtually impossible. And there's a big caveat to that. Of course, technology advances. You can figure out ways to do clever things in Photoshop or whatever it might be. But on our platform, if you come there, you're guaranteed that the next person isn't going to be generating the exact same thing. So even if you wanted a, you know, our patient or that creative image that speaks to a certain audience, it's really yours. And it's in a way to think custom content on demand.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
We want to stay away from the distribution and really focus on our vision, which
on
is
the creation.
The creation, but you know, helping the world repaint itself in a way that's representative. And there's going to be a lot of people that figure out some of the distribution aspects and how this integrates downstream. But for us, it's always a matter of priorities and sticking to the vision and the mission, which is, you know, doing something good for the world with this technology, but also solving a big pain point for our customers. And I should say, in the near short term and what seems to be pretty long term for us, we want to stay out of anything distribution, anything like that. We're just trying to create a safe, trusted platform that's aligned to, you know, your needs and usage.
I love it. Right now you're based in Singapore, right?
Yeah, Singapore, the little red dot, the crazy little place. This and just was never on my radar until I think it was around I don't know, maybe 5 years ago. It just dropped in randomly and fell in love with the place and managed to get back a few years later.
Are you looking for investors? Or do you have investors? Like, how do you actually build this company?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Getting anything off the ground is a challenge. And, you know, I came from a really strong technical background and knew that side really well. And just a lot of screwing up, figured out, you know, what needs to be put in place, understanding the business aspects, the customer side, the marketing side. And you, to get it off the ground, of course, is a bad idea to be doing this out of pocket. So I brought this idea into an accelerator and we got pre-seed funding for that. And we're actually getting ready to raise our seed round and build out the team, build out some new features that are very cool. I can't wait to show some of the stuff we're working on and just, you know, expand and get this out. So in the next really end of Q1 2023, we'll wrap up the final bits of that seed round. And yeah, off to the races, you know, see what we can do.
Awesome. I love it. And we're all already over 1 hour recording.
Wow.
It was really wow. Felt like five to 10 minutes, but it always feels that way when talking to you. It's so interesting. But
likewise,
I think, thank you very much. I think we're going to wrap this up for today. Because my typical interviews in the last, especially in this podcast season, was a lot shorter. So I hope it's not too much to ask for my audience. It was really interesting. The whole your journey, you as a person, and also your company that you're currently working on. I wish you obviously just the best. A lot of success. I know you get there, take some time like everything, but I'm super excited for you, and big thank you for joining me today. I'm so happy that we now that we did it for the first time. Like, who's to say that we don't do this on a regular basis? Because I love talking to you so much. It's so fun. I learn new things every time, and I think for today, we're gonna wrap it up. So yeah, thank you very much. And yeah, the last word is all yours.
No, likewise, Max. You inspire me in a lot of ways, man. And you've maybe you don't even realize, but kind of played a role in how I've ended up where I am here today and working on some of these ideas. And you know, I hope that we continue these conversations. And it's always a blast. Love your perspective. It's so different from mine. You always dig into areas that I don't see, which I love. So yeah, let's keep it up. And just again, super happy to see where you are with everything. And yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And for everybody that is that joined the live, thank you very much. For you guys on Spotify, thank you as well for tuning in. Don't forget to follow me. If you have any thoughts on this episode, please just drop a message. And as always, I'm gonna hear you next time. Take care. Bye bye.